The focus of day two is really on specimen preparation and imaging. And I think everyone recognizes Yoshi's group is really the renowned experts on one, building the best microscopes in the world, and probably preparing the best specimens. So I'll turn it over to Yoshi.
Thank you, Clint. I'm very happy to chance to come here, and I'm very much appreciate Bridget and Rod. Yeah, also. So, and I was asked to something talk about specimen preparation issues. So I made a title something like this. So fortunately, we could develop superfluid helium stage to be built into the conventional transmission electron microscope in 1986. From then, we made quite a bit of effort to improve resolution as well as operational difficulties, as you can see here. And recently, we somehow developed a top entry tilting device and also quite a bit improved for eucentric top entry system. And today I will skip these kind of things. But fortunately, we have a top entry stage relatively stable, and also specimen exchange cryotransfer system is effective, I should say. And then we can take 2 angstrom resolution in shorter than 10 minutes any new specimen just after finish previous specimen. So quick exchange help us to try many specimen preparation techniques, and then based on my record in a day, specimen exchange is 34 times. So it's maybe helps to discuss today's talk. And then I don't need to say, because here is a pioneer of electron crystallography. So, I want to confirm electron crystallography is a good candidate for structure analysis of membrane protein because of following reasons. Structure can be analyzed in membrane, of course, and the phase is calculated directly from image. So phase data is so important inference to quality of image. So we can get direct phase data. That is very nice. And third one is structure can be analyzed by even from poor crystal. Of course, the resolution is strongly depend on the quality of the crystal. And fourth one is very nice because we have a open space at the both side, and we have less influence at the loop region artificial interaction between molecule. And also another reason, maybe Nigel will give a talk on spray technique, and we have a chance to observe conformational change by spray technique or binding such as G protein bind to G protein coupled receptor from the other side. And these are very nice. So by using this electron crystallography, some of membrane protein structure could be analyzed. In the course of this kind of analysis, we could learn something important point for specimen preparation. Today, I will a little bit discuss 6 important items, as you can see here. First, flat support is very important. Means atomically flat carbon film and smooth molybdenum grid is very important. Because when, unfortunately, a two-dimensional crystal is very fragile. So then when you use rough carbon surface, and then a wrinkle appears and then blurred. This is a very important carbon support. Sometimes I try to use holy carbon film, didn't work. So we need support. So then we developed sparkless carbon film, as you can see here. If you can prepare without any spark, and then you can get a perfectly smooth carbon film. And then even one spark appeared, carbon is tend to fragile and rough. So for the aim, I recommend you will use pre-evaporation technique. Pre-evaporation means make a cluster on the rod of carbon, and then a cluster acts as something filter. So large cluster is filtered out by this carbon cluster by formed by pre-evaporation. Then you can get a very smooth carbon film. And even when we use this kind of smooth carbon film, as Frank Bui and Pauli mentioned, high temperature grid is very important. Then we purchased a commercially available molybdenum grid, and unfortunately, surface was rough, and then wrinkle appeared, as you can see here. So I asked Juera to make a very smooth molybdenum grid, and we could get very nice smooth carbon film. And I tried to do more wide open area, and then a wrinkle appeared, and I gave up. And then we keep a circular hole. And now a little bit cheaper, but still expensive. And second topic should be water evaporation dehydration problem. And to discuss about, I want to introduce, or as an example, I want to use aquaporin 4, which is very interesting for me because water channel is, I don't know why, but and somehow aquaporin 4 is strongly related with a higher order brain function. So quite interesting for us. Then I want to show one brief example. When I speak English, my brain is activated at only a peripheral area, not central area. When native speaker speaks English and you use the central part. And that is a reason, that is not just reason why I can use peripheral part and my English is so poor. But anyhow, so part is different. And, you know, this is taken by functional MRI by Tsutomu Nakata, and this shows us blood flow is regulated by something at a local area. In our body, surely we have a vascular smooth muscle, but in our brain, water percentage is 80 or 85%, and then all of something like a Japanese tofu. So there is no muscle. Then how this kind of blood flow regulated? So when we see the anatomical knowledge, you can see astrocyte, one of glial cell surrounding. If the volume or shape of astrocyte change, and then vascular capillary could be changed. So we are very much interested in, and very interestingly, at the end of food, lattice-shaped aquaporin 4 are expressed, molecules are expressed. And then we try to analyze, and we establish a recombinant technique and SF9 cell and purify 3 milligrams of aquaporin 4 from 1 liter culture, and fortunately, in short time, we could get beautiful 2D crystal. And fortunately, again, we could get beautiful diffraction pattern. And unfortunately, this turned out double-layered membrane, double membrane layers, two-dimensional crystal. And very badly, this double layer is a strip. And then we should select one type of periodic interaction. So it's not easy, even when we could get a high resolution diffraction pattern, it's very hard. So we know way we need take diffraction pattern, and from exactly same crystal, we need take high resolution image. So image is very sensitive to the shift. So we registered only one type of interaction, and eventually we could get structure. And very nice thing is the orthogonal array is exactly same with two-dimensional crystal. And then we can explain how this kind of orthogonal array is stabilized. And this is nice. But and when, you know, we prepared a crystal and we could take diffraction patterns such as shown here, 60 degree. And of course, we could get diffraction pattern to close to, we analyzed 3.2 angstrom resolution and this. And then if you see the area, we can see somehow close to 3 angstrom resolution. But these are all bad. Because when we prepare suitably, we can observe a diffraction spot higher than 2 angstrom. So, and then something like this. So when we try to analyze high resolution, we need to collect data at highly tilted condition, as you know. Then we need to prepare suitably thinner layer of this. Because when you prepare a thicker layer, and two-dimensional crystal have a chance to wrinkle. And then when you make a thinner one and push down and very nicely flat crystal can be observed. And then thinner one is of course give a better SN ratio. So this is an example thicker layers. And then as you see here, you can see diffraction is up to 2 angstrom resolution when parallel to tilting axis, but perpendicularly it's surely bluer. And then when we compare the dehydrate one, you cannot see any good diffraction spot, even tilting axis. So this one is surely bluer. Then we make a suitable specimen preparation, and we could get sharper diffraction pattern. So together with parallel to tilting axis. So these are very important. But when we try to make a thinner layer, we encounter some deformation by mechanical interaction with carbon surface. You know, you see this area and this area, and we, as I mentioned, we took an image, we calculated the map by image, as you see here, and corner of the 4 tetramer, and bumps appeared. This density map is calculated 0.5 sigma, and very weak sigma, and disordered, we cannot assign any structure in here. But surely, there is a significant density here and here at the you know, corner. Then, as you see, helix 1 and termini come here. And then when interact, this part interact with carbon and somehow deteriorate crystallinity of aquaporin 4, unfortunately. So then we need something careful technique to prepare, overcome this kind of mechanical interaction. So possible way might be sugar and embedding technique. Nigel and Richard clearly shows sugar embedding technique, especially glucose embedding technique. We use bacterial rhodopsin, and then when we perfectly dried specimen preparation technique, glucose is the best, as they published. And then our merge value is 10% or so. But when you use a partially hydrated condition, wet condition, then Trehalose gives a better R merge value, as you can see here. So I recommend Trehalose, and when we suitably prepare, I compare the this kind of things is not so easy to fair manner, but and I did fair manner, and then you see when you can anyhow use Trehalose, you can get close to 3 angstrom resolution as we analyze 3.2 angstrom. But if you carefully prepare the sample and use the Trehalose cushion, and then diffraction is come right to higher than 2 angstrom. So this kind of technique might be very important. So discuss more about this kind of things. I want to challenge a much more difficult sample. So this one is gap junction, already Mark and Vincent analyzed. And then 20 angstrom hole can be observed, and then rapid gating mechanism, and also very complicated gating regulation. For example, voltage sensitive, calcium sensing, or pH dependent gating mechanism are known. So to analyze this kind of gap junction channel, we again express by SF9 cell and purify and grow Atsunori Oshima grow into two-dimensional crystal. And surprisingly, the two-dimensional crystal was three membrane layers crystal, as you can see. So when you see the central layer, it's a hemichannel is densely packed, as you can see. But and outer membrane layer has no hemichannel because there is a bulky cytoplasmic domain, and then here any hemichannel cannot come into because interfere. So this is looks like fragile, and then but and the very good thing is at the center part. Here is even cytoplasmic side is very mobile. Double layer protect any interaction from outside. Then this is keep relatively native condition. And then we could get a significant density in the channel at a membrane layer. We named the plug, and this is we say plug density. And then we see the plug density from helix 1 attached to the cytoplasmic loop and then come in. So when I move to a little bit funny things, and you know, we somehow analyze IP3 receptor and voltage sensitive sodium channel by single particle method. I'm not sure our structure is surely correct or not, because our data is something like this, very noisy. But believe me, I can discriminate this image is belong to this and not this. When you have a patience to see 2 weeks these images, and I'm very sure you can discriminate this one is this one and not this one. Not just finding there is an image. It's amazing our brain, but and but you know, but still very noisy and very dangerous to say. And I want to show you more dangerous things. And this is a TRP channel. This is caged, funny structure. And I can say this is perfectly correct or not. So I cannot say. So but and I want to move to much more reliable result. This is Nigel's structure. I'm 100% sure this channel has no fully open to cytoplasmic side, but somehow caged structure could be observed. Because this one, as already yesterday Nigel mentioned, and as you can see, this part, cytoplasmic side, has no interaction with any other things, and then should be a preserved and intact structure. Then we carefully prepared and improved resolution to, we published 10 angstrom resolution, but now we got 5.5 angstrom resolution, and the density teach us C-loop forms something caged-like structure like this. And then when a molecule interact with carbon surface, it's very fragile and easily move, and such movement is strongly influenced to the Planck density. So easily disappear if we didn't carefully prepare a sample. So, you know, mechanical interaction of a molecule with carbon surface is very severe. So we need something, Trehalose cushion technique or so, and then we can preserve more. So far, we could get 5.5 angstrom resolution. I didn't show the map, but and in here, but and you will see some stage, yeah. So then I will move on to the last items. And beam-induced charge is very serious, as already Richard mentioned. So when, again, back to acetylcholine receptor, you see, we use Hori carbon support and carbon film. Carbon is a semiconductor. When specimen temperature cool down and then electric resistance is dramatically up, rise up. And so charging up is very serious. And also another serious thing is amorphous carbon drop down heat thermal conductivity at a low temperature. Of course, ice also may down. And lattice heat capacity is very low, almost zero, any material at a very low temperature. So temperature easily change. Even when we can cool down the specimen is by using super fluid helium and 1.5 Kelvin, but we cannot keep the specimen area beam illuminated. And then I try to measure the temperature. When I introduce neon, and then we can observe the ring of neon, 111 diffraction ring of cubic phase, cubic crystal of neon, then we can confirm a temperature is below 7.9 Kelvin. And when you can see the nitrogen ring, we can confirm this specimen temperature illuminated area, electron illuminated area is below 20 Kelvin. Then this is already 20 years old movie, but and maybe useful for you to show still now. So and I will explain just how I prepare gold colloid is embedded in ice and used Hori grid and evaporate gold, and then introduce nitrogen, and solid nitrogen film is formed. And I illuminate intense beam, and bubble appeared. So bubble means here, this area, because of high stopping power, high electron stopping power of gold, and temperature easily rise up at the gold area. Then we are sure this area is higher than 20 Kelvin. But we are sure here is below 20 Kelvin. So as you know, at first I illuminate by intense beam, and I reduce the beam, and then nitrogen cover this area. You will see. Start, I illuminate intense beam, and please carefully see. Then, yeah, reduce, and then this area of whole bubble will be covered, and then we are sure that this temperature is below 20 Kelvin because of solid nitrogen. And unfortunately, ice embedded particle can easily move around by illuminated electron beam. So this is very serious. So we 20 years ago we took and I depressed, but we quantitatively measured movement, beam in this movement, we discussing with Nigel, and we developed a pre-irradiation technique, and pre-irradiated fluorocarbon film helps a lot to reduce. And also I quite a bit designed cold stage, and we use gold aperture, and these kind of things are fundamentally overcome. And then Nigel could get nice data, as you can see. So, and I will discuss more about beam-induced movement, means image shift. So we want to learn electron crystallography following by Richard Henderson's pioneering work, exactly same by using exactly same sample, and we could get somehow structure, but when we try to collect the data, we encounter severe problem. Because when we try to take untilted data, it's relatively easy, because untilted specimen give a little bit focus change because of charge. But when we try to collect the data at tilted condition, easily this kind of image shift appear. This is Young fringe, means move, shift the image. And then we need to throw away more than 10,000 films because success ratio was just 2% or so. Accidentally, we could get a good image at 60 degree tilt. So we made a symmetrical specimen preparation, and then, amazing, the success ratio is dramatically improved to 95% or more than 90%. So then we try to show you carbon sandwich method. Carbon film is floated onto the buffer, and then picked up by molybdenum grid, as I mentioned. And then we will exchange trehalose embedded buffer. And then specimen applied from grid side and pipetting by pipetting, and then very importantly, next time we use platinum wire, and you need definitely need 2 millimeter square. You can use a larger piece of carbon, but and I recommend you will use smaller piece of carbon, and then transfer it to the grid, as you can see. And we carefully filter out by filter paper as possible as many, and then suck out, and then we can plunge into the liquid nitrogen. This is these are a reliable and simple technique, and then we can get such beam-induced shift, image shift can be overcome. And as a side effect or a very good effect, and dehydration problem also minimized by carbon sandwich technique. And then Thomas's you will hear Thomas talk, and then you can see the diffraction spot higher than 1.8 angstrom by aquaporin zero structure, and you can see diffraction spot 0 degree and 60 degree, something like this. Beautiful. So, and then we could get this kind of data by carbon sandwich technique, and they can analyze structure, including lipid molecule. You will hear more from him, Tom. So, and then I will, almost I did, in half an hour, I will use a bit about detector, and when we collect the data aquaporin zero, we use 2K by 2K slow scan CCD camera. Of course, 4K camera gives a better data, but when we use Tietz camera and gain 2, we could see, I believe, a little bit better data by Tietz camera. And you can see Wilson plot, something like Wilson plot, and Tietz camera gives a little bit better data. And by using this system, we recognize, and you know, radiation damage is very serious than higher resolution than 3 angstrom. So when we take a diffraction pattern less than 10 electron per square angstrom, it can give 2 angstrom or higher resolution, but when you illuminate more, and then surely at the 3 angstrom data is okay, but higher than 3 angstrom have a serious deterioration. And another interesting effect we could observe, asymmetric blurring could be observed, and then this can be caused by central beam shift because of charge, even non-tilted specimen. So tilted specimen, as I mentioned, is very serious. So when we try to collect good data, even diffraction, we encounter charging problem. So carbon sandwich techniques give a very nice sharp diffraction, even perpendicular to tilting axis, as you can see, as a aquaporin zero. So maybe I rush to talk, and then I will finish my talk. But before my closing my talk, cryo-electron microscope was collaborated with JOR people, and aquaporin 4 was done. Yoko Hiroaki is the first author, and Kazutoshi Tani made many calculations. And aquaporin 0 is definitely Thomas's group's work, and as you know, I don't need to say, but this is Nigel's. And gap junction was done by mainly Oshima, and collaborating with Gina Soshinsky. And CCD is we purchased from Tietz, and then we collaborate this kind of things. Thank you for your patience.
So we'll open this up for discussion. There must be plenty of questions.
Yeah.
I have a question.
It's of course.
So the question is, what's the difference between the Tietz and the Catan?
Right? We use a similar crystal, and could you see the difference?
Well, you see, because the exposure time is different, so it's not fair comparison.
We need longer exposure because sensitivity. So, what?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You see, because if you look at the artifact,
uh-huh.
right, they are comparing. Confidel is better than Inca 10.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is the accuracy of the diffractions, but not the log. Log is sometimes misleading.
Yeah. So this is data.
So I kind of like to see the data being collected in an identical way before we say one camera is better than the other.
I don't want to say so much about comparison, but and. We moved to this camera because we like this shorter and smaller exposure gives something good data. So that's all. So
are the scintillators the same? Is the phosphor thickness the same? And
I don't know. So maybe of course this comparison is might not fair. So. I don't want, but what I want to say is diffraction at higher resolution region is very severely damaged, and also beam shift appear, and here is sharp, but and this here is a little bit streak appear, and so such thing might.
Sample prepared with the carbon sandwich method?
No. This is not.
I see.
This is not. So, and we didn't, we, this is a carbon single layer.
Yeah.
So then this data is collected by carbon sandwich. So carbon sandwich helped to reduce the beam-induced beam shift. That is what I want to say. Yeah, and that's all what I want to say.
You got a question?
Yeah, and then could you go to the sandwich slide that you had, the cartoon?
Yeah.
So the question is, I mean, you have two carbon layers with a grid in between, is that right?
Yeah.
Aren't the samples kind of thick? I didn't understand.
Grid is something like this. So, and you know, carbon is.
Both carbons are on the top.
I'm talking about carbon is here and carbon is here. Carbon.
Yoshi, I think you told me that this you find this works best if you have specially made very thin molybdenum grid.
Yeah. It's we are using now 10 micron.
And nobody can buy that.
Anybody can. And the problem is a little bit expensive. How much? It's a $10 per grid.
Have you tried
less.
Yoshi, have you tried to use this method to prepare ice embedded specimen?
No. When ice embedded specimen is usually take untilted condition. You may
help too, because based on your experiment, you suggest in the diffraction data.
Maybe,
we saw that eons ago.
I'm afraid, carbon will give a noise, so ice is much transparent. And then, I don't know. So, when you attach the carbon, you have a background noise.
But how thin a carbon can you make? Can you say?
Yeah, 30 or 50 angstrom could be.
Have you tried to make, say, 20 angstrom carbon beam? Would you have the same effect?
Maybe. Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah. honestly speak, I'm not so much interested in. So, sorry. So, please do. Yeah, I didn't. So, I didn't. So, yeah, because I worried background noise for ice embedded sample. So, ice might be better. And we don't need to, yeah, when we try to collect the data at tilted condition, that is very severe. But an untilted condition, yeah, have some charge effect, but not so serious. Maybe Nigel will.
But do you think it will be useful for people who does tomography? I mean, they may
I have no experience, so I am a beginner, so. So.
Other questions?
Yeah.
What's the difference between sugar embedding and a sugar cushion?
Same. Exactly same. But, and, okay. Why? Yeah, it's, I'm a poor my English. So, and, you know, and here is a carbon. And when you prepare a sample, maybe a crystal, and then you will start 3% or 7% of trehalose. And if your sample is relatively stable to salt concentration change, and you can partially dry, and then come down. And this is increased to something 20% or so. And then should be trehalose act as a cushion of two-dimensional crystal covered by a carbon surface. So frequently, good data can be observed by dry 10 seconds or so.
So you dry briefly and then you freeze.
Yeah. So that helps. Yeah, so when we start 20% or so, and sometimes osmotic pressure change give an effect to the sample and destroy crystal. So slowly change concentrating trehalose may help to minimize such a artificial effect. I guess, yeah. Yeah.
How long does this process take to do? Like, do you do it consistently every single time? Like, is it 1 minute, 10 minutes before you put it in the liquid nitrogen and then transfer it?
This one?
Yeah.
This one, carbon sandwich. It's almost same, but then just add this one. So
how many minutes?
1 minute or?
That's okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Mark?
Outstanding. Beautiful work. And just wanted to congratulate Atsu Oshima on his analysis of Connexin 26. And it's so gratifying to see that the helical packing closely matches that observed by Vincent Zunger and Anchi Chang
in their studies
of Connexin 43. And I should point out that the plug density does not fall on a symmetry axis, suggesting that it really is a bona fide feature. And I'm curious if you think that during the drying process, the trehalose could precipitate in the pore and give rise to that plug density. That's one question. The second question is also fascinated by the plug density on the fourfold in the AKP4 crystals that you ascribed to the amino tail. Now, with that being on a symmetry axis and relevant to Richard's points last night about validating our maps, do you think that could be an accumulation of errors? So one is whether the plug density in 26 might be trehalose precipitated, and in AKP4, whether it could be an accumulation of errors.
Okay, and good question. So, and I didn't show data, but recently we analyze 3D structure by delete in terminals. And when we delete more than 7, and hemichannel is instabilized. So, and then we made six amino acid deleted one, and plug density is gone. So we are sure now plug density is made by N-terminus. So that is answer. You know, preparation is exactly the same. So even we use trehalose, plug density is gone when we delete N-terminus. That is a proof. So am I okay? Yeah, okay, so and then then second question is aquaporin.
Yeah, AQB4.
Okay, for what?
The density you observe that you ascribe to the amino
acid. N-terminus?
Yeah.
It's disordered, and then, you know, in case of aquaporin 4, dopamine tend to close the channel, tend to close aquaporin 4. Then we by phosphorylation. Then we are now analyzing, getting map of 2.5 angstrom of aquaporin 4, and then it's much clearer density at the N-terminus region. So it's sample preparation is same, but and we couldn't assign the density so far at that time. But in this case, wild type aquaporin 4 is surely disordered. So, and I'm very sure that is not trehalose.
So the density is seen in the dephosphorylated state?
No, a phosphorylated state give a stronger density at the N-terminus.
So you showed, is this on?
Yeah.
You showed the data about how the conductivity of carbon film changes with temperature. When you use the sandwich technique, you cannot pre-irradiate the carbon. To.
We shouldn't.
So I would have thought that then at helium temperature, you would still see charging even though you have two carbon films.
Yeah. Exactly, yes.
But I thought you were showing us diffraction, and you pointed out the spots don't move. There is no charging.
Yes, because of symmetrical preparation.
But if you have symmetrical insulators, how does that improve the situation?
Symmetrical insulator.
The carbon at helium temperature is a good insulator.
Yeah.
So if you sandwich your ice or your trehalose sample with two very good insulators, I would expect to see a lot of charging.
Yes.
But you were showing us there is not charging.
Yes, I said charging, but compensates the direction. You know, it's, yeah. again, my poor English. So, and, As you see, there is a charge. Charges remain. Even when we make a symmetrical carbon sandwich didn't increase electric conductivity, but symmetrical arrangement compensate beam shift. That is, I'm not sure this is correct or not, but and I try to interpret. So,
but I'm pretty sure it is not.
Sorry. Could you explain why we can get better data?
First of all, I would say, only if I have a friend as close a friend as Yoshi is to me and who I admire as much. Would I make such a joke in a talk? So just so the audience doesn't misunderstand me, I know Yoshi doesn't misunderstand me. So the as I understand it from the idea here that the surface of the carbon film has a positive charge. That's what your sketch shows.
Yeah. Negative charge.
And the carbon and so there should be a net charge or is it a dipole layer?
I don't know. So.
But if it is an insulator, it must be a net charge. And if it is a dipole layer, then it's a conductor. And so I think that I personally don't think that your drawing, you know, and the argument about the symmetrical is actually correct. And one has to apply a consistent thinking about either it is a conduct, it can conduct or it cannot.
Yeah, I can, when you, Bateman or someone shows beam illuminate and then suddenly expand beam and
Berryman,
then,
you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we can clearly see the charge.
You can see the footprint.
Yeah. Footprint. Yeah. Even when we prepare a carbon sandwich.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely. That, definitely. Clear footprint can be observed.
All my experience would agree with what you said.
Yeah.
But, but if there is charging, then that now it's getting into a really complicated thing that we have to draw on the board. I won't do that.
I see.
Now, Ken and I published a paper a couple of years ago showing a diagram similar to your top one for the single, and we argued in that case already it's a dipole layer, and so it would act the way it does in your bottom diagram. But if you're thinking that the carbon film has a net positive charge, not a dipole layer, but net charge, then it should not help any to have two symmetrical net positive charge layers, you know, top and bottom.
Okay, I should change this figure. Yeah. Okay.
Well.
I can change.
I wish I knew. I actually have another.
I want to know.
So far, we've been talking as charge. We've been talking about the hypothesis. Let me pause and start again. We know the experimental results that you showed are true and reproducible from one laboratory to another. I wish it wasn't so, but it's unfortunately reproducible. The fact that you tilt a specimen, the images head south. You know, that's an English slang. The images become terrible when you tilt.
Really?
We've been talking about the hypothesis that the reason for this is charging. Is there another hypothesis? What other physical mechanism could produce the experimental results that we are so unhappy about, other than charging?
As you mentioned, pressure change
I didn't catch the.
Pressure change.
Mechanical stress.
Mechanical stress
from radiation damage. And so the issue is, can we do experiments that would falsify at least one of these, and then leave the other on a sounder scientific basis than to just assume to begin with that it's charging and have no other explanation in mind. That now is an open discussion for everybody. I do not have the experiment, but I did want to point out that we need to approach this in the scientific method of formulating all, I'm not just talking to you, I'm talking to the whole audience, obviously. We need to formulate all physically reasonable hypotheses and start thinking about systematically eliminating some.
Yeah, and then we can find better way. Yeah, yeah.
How about flatness? Flatness to begin with.
Yeah.
So
David says, could the loss of resolution perpendicular to the tilt axis be due to flatness? And
Lack of
flatness, all right. Good point. Speaking a little bit in lab jargon here. And the experimental fact is you prepare a given sample, and many of the samples, when you look at the diffraction pattern, are not flat to begin with. But some fraction will be flat enough that you can see sharp spots perpendicular to the tilt axis. And then you start to take an image of that, and almost none of them show sharp, even though the sample itself is flat. So there is a second effect that occurs when you record the image that the electron diffraction is not sensitive to. And if it were charging, electron diffraction would be sensitive, as Yoshi pointed out. The spots would streak or blur. But if it's mechanical drumhead kind of motion, electron diffraction is not sensitive to that. Spots will stay sharp, but the images will you know, take a turn for the worse.
I wanted to ask Yoshi, in terms of charging and movement and so on, some people think spot scan helps you quite a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I wondered whether, after you get an improvement from 2% to 95%, whether if you then use spot scan, you go up to 100%.
I'm lazy, so and I don't want complicate. I don't want use complicated things.
Did you never try?
I did.
Yeah.
I did, but you know, my impatient nature didn't accept this way. So I try to keep conventional flat beam technique. Sorry. So yeah, you can do so.
Any questions?
How does pre-irradiation work?
It's you know, I showed Nigel's lab used such a special tool, but and in our case we use a film holder. Do you know film holder?
Yeah.
And then take off film, and 100 or 1,000 grid is put on, and then put into the film setting area, and all aperture take off, and just intense beam illuminate, and overnight, longer than 4 hours, and then enough. And you can use at least 1 year after pre-irradiate.
But what do you think it does to the carbon film?
Maybe some part is graphitized, and then at a low temperature, of course, mechanically stronger and higher, one order higher conductive, electric conductive. So anyhow, works. Yeah, Nico?
Yoshi, you showed this movement in ice under the electron beam.
Yeah.
Does anybody, do you or somebody else, understand how that is possible?
There are many. Maybe Bob can explain. I try to explain by myself, but wrong. Maybe. You know, at temperature change, and then gold tend to expand, and amorphous ice. Maybe change the structure or melt because of pressure rise. And charge, even on gold, charge accumulate and then tend to direct some way. So, you know, when we observe holy carbon film, in early stage, we need when we your could you turn on the light? This is holy carbon film, and then you see the tubular crystal like this, and then we shouldn't eliminate electron beam something like this. When we eliminate this kind of things, this image move. But when we illuminate like this, even when we care this part, but the central part is wholly center, then stop the movement. So am I right, Nigel? Yeah.
Yes. It used to be like that, but I think, you know, we got charge under control so much.
Yeah, but now we can forget it.
Yeah. Well, just a follow-up question, follow-up Nico's question. Do you have data or have you observed any correlation between the magnitude of movement and the size of the gold particles? And if there's some kind of correlation, maybe we can deduce some physical mechanism.
Maybe. We can do. But in such case, at 200 angstrom in diameter, the gold particle is. I made gold particle 200 angstrom in diameter. So, but I didn't do. It's a quite old movie. So.
Can I ask, have you done the experiment where you heat up the amorphous ice to get cubic ice? And then see if gold particles move?
Yeah, but stop, of course. Stop.
So if you have cubic ice there,
everything
stops.
Yeah.
So why don't people do, when they do single particle analysis, and why don't they?
Maybe phase change may give a change or change the conformation or something.
No, I don't believe that's true. At least I think Richard or Werner Kuhlbrandt took pictures of TMV in amorphous ice that had been crystallized to make cubic ice, and they diffracted really well. So
maybe.
Is that a possible way of reducing?
It's a possible way. And when you rise up and crystallize, you rapid freezing technique, originally Kentera and Bob developed an freezing technique and ice embedding technique. And then that is that a hexagonal ice?
Yes.
In hexagonal ice, crystalline ice may stop the movement. I don't know, but yeah. So
but
if there is no serious damage.
Growing ice, but I think in cubic ice that doesn't happen. So I think it just sort of forms around the specimen. So I don't see why it should necessarily disturb the specimen at all.
I see.
I don't think it.
I tested the temperature change and then
So you can just rise it up.
So and then the movement is slow down or stop. No.
It's all sort of low resolution noise.
Fortunately or unfortunately, when you illuminate electron beam to cubic ice, cubic ice change to amorphous. So cubic ice change to.
Quite a dose to do that, Yoshi.
I never see nitrogen temperature. So. Sorry.
Just want to come back shortly to the slide there. When you tilt the image or tilt the specimen, then the ice layer and carbon layer will increase in thickness as well. Do you think this can cause, in part, the image shift that you observe?
Maybe not so.
Have you tried any taking like diffraction pictures of the similar ice layer thicknesses then, for example, once not tilted?
Very difficult to regulate thickness, so, and measures accurately. So I'm sorry, I have no idea. Sorry.
and also,
yeah,
whether there's an advantage to faking the
curve,
making your grids in and out.
You mean green mica? I don't know. It's superstition or not, but and but and we believe green mica is better than brown mica. So. Yeah, I don't know why, but do you know someone? So, yeah, so anyhow, so we are using green mica. So, and baking grid, it's a baking grid. And instead, electron illuminate, if you can heat up grid in vacuum, of course, and then helps. Yes. Yeah. We can use in Descartes. Yeah, Descartes. Yeah.
Good question.
Time over. Yeah. Please.
One more question.
I try to escape.
So it's not very important, but I just wanted to say that if I remember rightly. When you pre-irradiate a grid, what's happening is the diffraction pattern of the carbon is changing. Because if you take diffraction patterns of carbon films at doses from, say, a very low dose, a couple of electrons per square angstrom to 20 electrons per square angstrom, the diffraction pattern does change. So the irradiation is actually moving the atoms around to form some sort of microcrystals, graphite or diamond. Mm. I don't think you do quite the same thing by heating it. You'd have to heat it to a very high temperature for that to happen. So I think the pre-irradiation is a really special thing in changing the properties of the carbon film.
Yes.
Okay, Yoshi's been on the spot for 40 minutes now, so let's give him a break.